From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As President Donald Trump's defense team continues to deliver arguments in the early part of the week, the opening salvo from Attorney Jay Sekulow on Monday was to claim that all Trump was guilty of was having a policy difference with the Democratic Party, and for that he was being unfairly impeached. But since last Friday, Trump's impeachment defense has had to contend with several key damaging stories. First, a secret audio recording of Trump from Lev Parnas makes it clear that the president decided to oust U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch personally. And second, that former National Security Advisor John Bolton does indeed have first-hand knowledge of Trump's Ukraine dealings and has written a book about it. My guest is Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She writes frequently for Truth Out, and her latest piece about impeachment on Truth Out is entitled First the Trial, Then the Evidence, Impeachment in Wonderland. She's been a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Marjorie.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So since Friday, so much has happened. First, the Democrats on the House impeachment team wrapped up their arguments. They are the sort of prosecutors, if you will, right, in this whole process. And on Saturday, using just 2 out of their 24 hours, the Trump defense team began their opening arguments. But before that, we heard this bizarre, interesting 80-minute audio file that Lev Parnas' lawyer made available. How significant is this lawyer, where Trump essentially is heard personally saying that Marie Yovanovitch, the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, should be removed?
That's very significant, because Marie Yovanovitch was leading the anti-corruption effort on the part of the United States in Ukraine. And yet, when she was perceived as interfering with Trump and Rudy Giuliani's agenda, they axed her. And Trump did that in this taped conversation with Lev Parnas. It's very hard to argue with the tape. One of the interesting things about the Bolton transcript of his book, which I know we're going to be talking about, is that Bolton writes that Yovanovitch, Rudy Giuliani, may have had it in for Yovanovitch because she was targeting some of Rudy Giuliani's clients in Ukraine. Another level of corruption. And of course, this is corruption by Rudy Giuliani. You can understand why Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump are such fast friends, because they're so similar. But yet, on Monday, as part of the defense case, the first appearance of a non-white male was a white female, and that was the attorney Jane Raskin, who was talking. She was defensively talking about how Rudy Giuliani was not this horrible person that the managers portrayed, and how the managers had repeated several times Rudy's name. But she was really kind of lionizing Rudy, kind of comparing him to Clarence Darrow. I found that very, very interesting, because Rudy Giuliani is not the pillar of the lawyer with integrity that she was trying to make out.
So Lev Parnas's lawyer, Joe Bondi, says that his client has more recordings. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And the whole Parnas testimony and him sort of, you know, speaking out happened after the House wrapped up its impeachment investigation and voted on the articles of impeachment. And it happened right before the Senate impeachment trial began. I'm not sure if you think that the Democrats feel that Parnas is not a credible witness. They haven't talked about bringing him to speak out. Interestingly enough, the recording that Parnas put out there already exposes one major Trump lie. Trump claimed over and over again he doesn't know who Parnas is. Here's a recording of Trump and Parnas directly talking to one another, notwithstanding the many photos of Trump and Parnas together. But why is Parnas not being elevated more by the Democrats?
I think the Democrats are focusing on John Bolton, who's really the most explosive witness here. And one of the things we need to keep in mind is that the defense attorneys, Trump's defense attorneys, keep talking about how the impeachment takes place in the House. That's the record. If the House had holes in its case, that's their problem. Of course, the reason that the House actually presented an overwhelming airtight case of both articles of impeachment. But if there are any holes in its case, it's because of Trump's stonewalling of the entire impeachment inquiry. And that's the substance of Article 2, obstruction of Congress. But also, aside from that, since the manager's case concluded, and since they voted these articles of impeachment against Donald Trump, there's newly discovered evidence, including the Lev Parnas tape and including the John Bolton manuscript. And so any trial can be opened, in most instances, actually, for newly discovered evidence. And yet that is something that we haven't heard about. Now, I think that probably the House managers would love to have Lev Parnas testify, but they're focusing on these four witnesses who are eyewitnesses, front row seats to Trump's corrupt behavior, Trump's abuse of power, and John Bolton leads the pack.
Right. On Saturday, Trump's legal defense team put out several claims, one of which was that there was no witness that had been presented with direct knowledge of the alleged wrongdoing by Trump, who is on record. So they worded their defense quite carefully, because you said no witness with direct knowledge, because Bolton wasn't subpoenaed, hasn't made an appearance since, of course, Trump has said he would exert executive privilege. They were able to say that. Enter Bolton's book, which had been submitted to the White House for review. As all, I guess, if you work in the White House and you want to write a book about your experience, you have to submit it for review so that any national security issues can be, redacted, etc. So it's interesting that they worded this very carefully. And here comes Bolton, who apparently wasn't the one who leaked this book, which is also kind of confusing.
Yes, well, they submitted it for review for classified information. And without it coming to light, the White House could have just deep-sixed the whole book and we'd never hear about it. But the most explosive thing that Bolton wrote in that book was that in August, Trump told him directly that he was continuing the freeze on military assistance to Ukraine until Ukraine helped him with his so-called investigations. That's the smoking gun. That's the direct evidence that the defense is complaining that the managers did not present. And the managers, of course, did present a lot of evidence from a number of people, including Gordon Sondland and many other people that talk. And these are all Republicans. These are all Trump administration employees. It's not like the Democrats in the House brought in Democratic witnesses. But they did make a very strong case. But what Bolton's testimony would do is to really solidify it so there's no answer to it at all. And what Trump is doing is setting up an executive privilege opposition to Bolton, saying Bolton's testimony would hurt national security. He knows my thoughts. And I think what we're going to see, well, I don't know, but I'm thinking now that these four so-called moderate Republicans will now have political cover to vote for more witnesses, for witnesses in the first place in the Senate and for documents, whereas they had been kind of wavering before. And then Trump will say, I have executive privilege. I do not want Bolton to testify. Now, he has already raised this issue of absolute immunity, and that's why he resisted all the subpoenas for documents and witnesses in the House inquiry, saying that if witnesses did not comply with subpoenas, they would have absolute immunity against civil and criminal liability. This is a doctrine that no court has ever upheld. In fact, recently a court struck it down. But it's the Office of Legal Counsel and Department of Justice that has put forward this theory. That's different from executive privilege, where once the witness takes the stand and is asked a specific question, then the defense, Trump's defense, could say, we object to him answering that question on the grounds of executive privilege. Now, executive privilege, and I think we're going to see a lot of talk and analysis and I don't know about litigation, but argument over this whole issue of executive privilege. The case that really talks about the limits of the president's ability to withhold relevant evidence based upon confidential executive communications is U.S. versus Nixon, in the Nixon case, where Nixon, although he did cooperate largely with the impeachment inquiry, which Trump hasn't cooperated with at all, Nixon refused to turn over the so-called smoking gun tapes. And the U.S., in U.S. versus Nixon, a unanimous Supreme Court said that executive privilege can be denied. In other words, it's limited. There is an executive privilege, but it's limited, particularly if there's a need to get the evidence for a criminal case. Now, this is not a criminal case, but the Supreme Court set up a balancing test, and they said that the balancing would be the president's interest in keeping his communications private versus the need to investigate presidential wrongdoing. This very well might come down on the side of let Bolton testify. But the Supreme Court did say in that case, in the Nixon case, that it did not involve diplomatic or military matters. So that is a distinction that Trump's defense lawyers will likely seize upon to argue that even if Bolton does have to comply with a subpoena to testify, that he doesn't have to answer these tricky questions or these incriminating questions. But keep in mind, backing up, the American people are watching this. And even without the Bolton bombshell, overwhelming numbers of, well, 70% of respondents in a Pew poll said that there should be witnesses and documents produced in the Senate trial. And a majority said that they think that he should be removed, and a strong majority think that he either did something wrong ethically or did something illegal.
So on this issue, if Bolton is, successfully silenced through executive privilege, one of the issues that has been raised is that this is a policy difference matter, that this is just Trump taking a different policy position on Ukraine. If that were true, how to explain the Office of Management and Budget deeming the Trump administration's actions to withholding Ukraine aid to be illegal? Isn't that a bright line of a crime having been committed, a clear violation of a law?
Yes, the Government Accountability Office said that
the GAO, sorry.
Right. By withholding congressionally approved military assistance, Trump violated the law. And so there is a legal violation, but the defense attorneys, who really don't have a leg to stand on in contesting the facts, which are overwhelming, pointing to his abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, they are seizing on arguments like process. Trump didn't get due process in the House, whereas he was offered to participate. There was an offer for him to participate, and he declined. And even Ken Starr today was harping on process. But they are also saying that really this is not a question of lawbreaking. One of the things that Ken Starr was the architect of the Clinton impeachment, who said that impeachment is hell, just like war, saying impeachment should not even be used, where, you know, he had spent months and months and even years amassing the Starr report in a failed trial. Well, Clinton was impeached, but he wasn't removed by the Senate. But Ken Starr also said that you talked about process, and the Trump's lawyers are talking about, well, it's just policy differences. It's not really a violation of the law. And Ken Starr said there has to be a violation of the law. Abuse of power isn't enough. And then he was twisting himself in knots, trying to distinguish the Clinton and Nixon impeachments, where abuse of power was one of the articles of impeachment alleged. And I think, Sonali, let me just leave it at that.
Yeah, well, one of the things I want to ask you is, on the issue of witnesses, the New York Times published an op-ed on Monday by three law professors who said that the Chief Justice John Roberts can call witnesses to Trump's trial. They said that Democratic House managers should ask the Chief Justice to issue subpoenas for John Bolton and others. The question is, will he?
I say no. I think John Roberts would rather be anywhere than where he is right now, presiding over this Senate impeachment trial. But the Constitution says that the Chief Justice has to preside. And he is doing what he promised to do during his confirmation hearings, and he certainly has not done throughout his Supreme Court tenure, and that is calling balls and strikes. He really does not want to do anything controversial. And I think in his heart of hearts, John Roberts must know that this is really a the whole proceeding is overwhelming evidence. There is overwhelming evidence of Trump's guilt, as Adam Schiff mentioned in his very, very passionate closing argument. And even though the Chief Justice may well be able to call witnesses, this is not set in stone what would happen, because then 51 senators could overrule him, because the Senate has the sole power to try impeachments under the Constitution. And I just don't think that Roberts is going to want to go out on a limb like that.
So what do you think the Mitt Romney's and, you know, the so-called moderate senators are likely to do on Monday? Mitt Romney said that he suspects that others will join him, and that he made it clear that he would like to see witnesses testify and that he may just vote to do so. Now, actually saying that he'd like to have it happen and voting against his party are two different things. We're talking about Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, Cory Gardner and Mitt Romney. If all four of these senators in a vote that's supposed to or potentially taking place later this week on witnesses, if they vote against the Republican Party, we could end up having witnesses. But of course, you can't guarantee all Democrats, unfortunately, will stick with the Democratic Party either. So these are really, really slim margins, right?
They are, but I can't imagine any Democrat voting against having witnesses. And I think, you know, the fact that there are only four Republicans who are willing to buck the who might be willing to buck the president on this very, very narrow issue. We're not talking about voting to convict him. Ultimately, we're talking about asking for witnesses. And now with the Bolton bombshell, there's good reason for that. The Frank Rich said it best, and I've actually quoted him in a number of media appearances and in the article that you referenced. They're acting, this is the Republicans in the House and the Senate, like what he called Vichy Republicans, which is a very explosive term, because the Vichy government in France was the government during the Nazi occupation of France who was doing Hitler's bidding. So to call them Vichy Republicans is just, you know, a really, really powerful characterization. And yet I can't think of any stronger or more accurate characterization for these Republicans to a person so far, to a person, who have walked in lockstep with the president with overwhelming evidence that he is, in Adam Schiff's words, endangering our democracy. He's not going to stop doing these things. He will continue to do them. And who knows what? I mean, he's assassinating, he assassinated Soleimani, which is a war crime, which violates the UN Charter and the War Crimes Act. He could have been impeached for that. He is going to continue to do very dangerous things. We have no idea what he'll do. And that's why he needs to be removed.
What do you think the Trump administration is going to try to pull out in these next few days? It seems as though they're relying solely on Republican senators, voting to acquit, voting against witnesses. They're basically, Trump's defense at the heart of it seems to be to rely on the Republican Party for cover. But senators, some of them, are facing re-election later this year. Trump claims that because they're facing re-election, they really should be voting in favor of him. But isn't it true that there are some senators that are quite vulnerable, that if they vote in favor of Trump, could actually lose re-election?
They could, and they're terrified of him. They're terrified of, you know, he's a bully. He's the consummate bully, and he has this bully pulpit, and he has his Twitter pulpit. And they are, and anybody that he perceives as going against his interest, he is really, really strong in lambasting them. He's threatening Adam Schiff now,
he said that Schiff hadn't yet paid the price for the damage he's done to our country.
Right, right. And what the Lev Parnas tape shows, that Trump said, take her out, you know, Yovanovitch, take her out. Get rid of her. So, I mean, that's really menacing. Is he talking about taking her out of her position, or is he talking about a mafia hit? I don't know. And so these Republicans are terrified. They're timid. I haven't seen any backbone from any of them yet. no integrity, just walking in lockstep with Trump like good Vichy Republicans. And it's really, really distressing for the future of this country, Sonali.
Are there other means left at the Democrats' fingers to, you know, do something about Trump? I mean, it's not just about making a case and exposing him and, you know, hoping that he doesn't get reelected. This is, of course, about accountability for violating the Constitution. And I've had arguments with several folks around whether impeachment is really strategically useful or not. But if somebody acts as this president has done and he is not held accountable, it essentially opens the door to future presidents to make things worse and worse and worse. And then we really have nothing left in terms of a constitution and calling it a democracy. So what else can the Democrats rely on other than the court of public opinion? They finished their opening arguments rather in the Senate impeachment trial. And now they just have to wait and see for the Republicans to do something.
Well, also, I mean, the court of public opinion, let's not minimize it. During Watergate, people were riveted to their TV sets, and people are watching this. The ratings are very strong. And so even if he gets acquitted, which he likely will by these Vichy Republicans, he still has to answer to the voters in November. And people, I think that those poll numbers are going to actually rise as people see what is happening and if they try to hold hide Bolton's testimony. But the other thing is that after the defense presents its case, then the senators have 16 hours to submit questions to the lawyers on both sides. And although usually in a trial, the prosecutor gives its closing argument, and that's what Schiff did. And then the defense presents its closing argument, and then the prosecutor comes back and rebuts the defense. There is no rebuttal by the House managers. That's it. They gave their closing arguments. The defense is presenting its case. But there is room during the senator's questioning to challenge many of the lies, and I just want to say lies. I mean, when the defense attorneys get up and say with a straight face, Trump did nothing wrong, it just doesn't pass the straight face test. But there will be an opportunity when the senators are allowed to ask questions to challenge some of the Democratic senators can challenge many of the assertions of the defense. So that still remains. And then, of course, the court of public opinion, which I would not minimize at all.
Finally, Marjorie, in terms of the media coverage of the impeachment trial, have you been satisfied at all with the corporate media coverage, the mainstream media coverage? I mean, certainly proceedings can be viewed directly on C-SPAN and many stations are carrying them live. Fox News is not. They're cherry picking. That's to be predicted. But in general, are you satisfied with the media coverage of the impeachment trial?
Well, I flip back and forth from CNN to MSNBC, and I think they are doing a good job of covering it, but the print media as well. But yes, Fox News, they have a little box. This is my understanding. They have a little box with the impeachment trial, and then they have voiceovers. Now, I think they're probably covering the defense case directly. But that brings up another point, and that is that many of these Republican senators, if not most, have never heard this evidence before. You and I have heard it because we followed the impeachment inquiry in the House, but they've never heard it before because they watch Fox News, and yet they have to sit there under the Senate rules quietly without their cell phones. And if they talk, they could be imprisoned. And this is what the proclamation that's made at the beginning. They have to sit there, and they are hearing, many of them, hearing this evidence for the first time. Now, some of them get up and walk around and come and go, but the bulk of them are hearing the bulk of these accusations and this overwhelming evidence. Now, whether that will translate into a vote for witnesses and testimony, and possibly be a vote for guilt remains to be seen. I have my doubts.
Marjorie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your latest article in Truth Out, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the program in the future.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's also a writer for Truth Act. We've been discussing the latest in the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.